Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Putting It Together. I'm Brian O'Sullivan. This is my podcast of creative conversations. And this week, I'm excited to welcome my guest, Jonathan Watson, to the show. It was great to sit and chat to him and to hear a bit more about his process and how he goes putting things together, I suppose. And I've watched him work. I've seen him, you know, work over the years on telly and in theatre and stuff. But I've also had the chance to watch him work more closely recently, and that's been great too. So to talk to him after that puts the two things together in my head. So that was excellent, and I hope you enjoy it. There's a lot more guests coming up, of course, a new one every week, and I've been recording some in advance, so I know some of them, and the rest remains a mystery to me as much as you, as has always been the case. So we'll continue, and we're getting to Fringe time soon, which will give me a chance to get more people in, even if they don't yet know that they're going to be on the show. Some of those people who are coming to Edinburgh for the Fringe might just be surprised to find out that they're about to be guests on this podcast, if indeed they are willing. So today, a wee bit of a departure for me. I was filming a bit for a sitcom, and it was improvised, and I started my day early and nervous. But I get nervous for everything. I don't see that as remarkable, or that I need to change it. It just is, I suppose. I just accept it as part of my process. I don't try and get rid of it anymore. So there I was, up at the crack of dawn and nervous and ready to improvise on camera. And, you know, it was a lot of fun. And, gosh, I just hope it turns out well, and I hope it makes it into the show. But there you go. There you go. That's the mystery. Meanwhile, the sound design for Toonspeak production of Telt is coming along fairly swiftly and getting more complicated by the day. But that's all part of the fun. Back to that soon. And the show is going up next week, a week on Friday at the Tron, 3rd and 4th of August. So do come along. It's going to be a pretty unique show, not like any youth theatre type of a show you'd be used to. So that's good. It's definitely going to make its own mark, and I'm pleased to be a part of it. And it's really good watching the young people come on, because it happens so quickly. The progress happens so quickly with them because it's such an intensive process. So it's great. Glad to be part of it. So that continues very shortly. I've stopped that for a moment just to chat to you briefly, to bring you this interview, which I'm very excited for you to hear. I'm looking forward to hearing it back as well. So thanks for joining me today, and always do tweet about us. Give the show a wee punt. It's PitCCPod on Twitter. And if you've any suggestions, brian@puttingittogethercast.com. That's all I'll say for now. I'll leave you in the hands of me and Jonathan Watson, and we are Putting It Together.
Mary had a little lamb, 1, 2, 1, 2.
That's great.
There you go.
So good. We'll keep that in as well.
Cost you extra.
How are you with warm-ups? Do you have a load of routines for warming up?
For warming up?
Just hearing you go, Mary had a little lamb there. Some people are very
specific. No, I don't have anything that... No, what for doing a theatre show, it's usually just running through the lines.
Everyone?
Pretty much. And I'll do scales, quite badly, but I'll do them nevertheless.
Yeah, but it's the attempt, isn't it?
Yeah. Like you go for it.
I'm working with young people at the moment, and trying to get them to go. It doesn't matter if you get the tongue twister wrong.
At least you're trying.
It's the trying that's going to get you going. But yeah, if you just stop and close your mouth, we're getting nowhere.
Yeah.
You know. Aye. So the theatre warm up, I suppose, or the preparation, is different from the telly.
Very different.
Yeah. How does it?
Well, it's just a completely different medium. I mean, it's the thing that I always find with theatre work, it kind of consumes the whole day.
Yeah.
You know, you don't. When I do a theatre job, it's there all the time. It's whereas at least with television, you know, when you wrap at 7 or 8 at night, you can chill and, you know, back to the house and all that kind of stuff. So it's different in that respect.
Because with the theatre one, it's at least 10 or 11 before you're even leaving the building.
Yeah, well, that's true. So, but both good to do nevertheless.
I guess so. Did you think that you would do both when you were younger? Did you have an idea of what you were going to do?
Well, you mean how did I get into it?
I suppose so. Yeah.
When I was about 10 years old. My dad came home one night and he said, "Look," he said, "there's a junior course that runs at the drama college down at St George's Place,"
mm-hmm.
It was 2 hours on a Saturday between 10 and 12 and about an hour after school on a Wednesday. Mm-hmm. He said, do you want to give it a go and see if you like it? And I said, yeah. And he said, look, if it's not your thing, he said, don't worry about it. But I went along and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I really enjoyed it. And at that time, if the BBC or whoever were casting anything that required children, they would probably come along on a Saturday and sit up at the back and observe.
So that was the place to be, really.
Well, if that's what you wanted to do, with me, and certainly I'm sure with a lot of the kids that were there, it was by accident, and that isn't why I signed up to it.
Right.
But at that time, if they were looking for somebody, that's what they would do. And as a result, I get involved in doing quite a lot of television when I was towards the tail end of primary school and into secondary school.
Right, that young.
Yeah, and things, you know. But the first thing I did was a Wednesday play, which was this, a forerunner to Play for Today. Mm-hmm. Quite a good part in one that was done up in Scotland. That was it was actually the first colour drama transmitted from Queen Margaret Drive. And then on to things like Dr. Finlay's Casebook, mm-hmm. and, you know, and then on to Sutherland's Law, and also lots of school stuff.
Right.
They had a very, very active schools department. They used to do a feature called Around Scotland, which basically charted the entire history of Scotland from the year dot.
Mm-hmm.
And it provided a huge amount of work to a lot of actors up here. And any time they needed a kid for it, I usually go on it.
So wow.
I did quite a lot. In fact, it was much the same for Brian Pettifer and Alex Norton.
Yep.
They were at the junior course as well. They were just a little bit older than me, so I missed them. But they did the same as well. And I loved it. I absolutely, it was great. I mean, it meant that I had quite a bit of time off school in about the first two, three years at secondary school.
Yeah, yeah.
Which maybe wasn't too good an idea. But I can honestly say I had no intention of pursuing it at that point as a career. It was a hobby.
Loads of fun and just what you did. And
yeah, it was great. So that's how I get started for it.
But your dad, you said your dad came home one day and just said, there's this thing. I mean, was that apropos of something that you were showing some aptitude at home, or you?
Well, I don't know. I was an only child, so maybe they had enough of me when I shimmy out from it.
Me too. See,
you'll know then. I mean, I think only my son's an only child as well, and he's quite a good sense of humour. And I'm sure that's been around adults a lot of the time. And
yeah, I think so.
You know, I was certainly. My father and my uncle were big influences on me, and I loved their sense of humour. And and it was actually, I think I'm right in saying it was somebody in my dad's office had suggested it. It said they'd heard about it and said maybe it's the kind of thing that your Jonathan would like.
Right, I see.
And but there was no history of it in the family. There was no, you know,
yeah,
we didn't know of anybody else that had going down that route, but as I said, there was no plan to do this when I grew up. In fact, I can remember one of the very first meetings I had with my careers officer,
mm-hmm.
who was an old maths teacher, Miss Kinloch. I should add that when I was at secondary school, a careers officer was very much in its infancy, having somebody to advise you.
This was a new thing.
A new thing. And I remember going in to see her, and she said, right, sit down. She said, no, what are we thinking about here? And I had recently finished a short series for BBC, and one of the guys that worked in it as an assistant cameraman was a guy called Jonathan Shorstein, and he had trained at the National Film School, which was kind of newly formed. And I talked to him about it, and I thought it sounded quite interesting. And I remember saying to Miss Kinloch, I was wondering if it'd be possible to maybe get hold of a prospectus for the the National Film School and see what courses
right.
are on offer. And I can remember she went, right, okay. And she looked at me and she said, tell me, she said, have you ever thought about hotel catering? And I was like, okay, right. So I've yet to see a prospectus for that.
still waiting. And
but,
that's an interesting link to make in your head. There must have been some logic in her head that said, well, yes, but...
I don't know. I think she was just very bad at her job.
She had that plan no matter what you said.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you ever thought about hotel catering?
It was in place, so... But so that was there was no plan to go into it.
That's amazing. I did my work experience as a sort of a shadow in different departments at the Lion King musical in London.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
I was about 15 and I had been doing shows and stuff for years and loved it. And that was just, I knew by that point that I wanted to be involved. There was no other thing.
Right.
But the paperwork hadn't been properly filled out the week before the work experience was supposed to start. And we were all sat down in the school hall. And somebody who was in charge said, now I'm going to call out the list of people who haven't organised their work experience and who will be going to Annie's Land College to work in the kitchen. And I was like, right, I'll just ignore them. Well, my name was on the list because
you didn't do it.
The Lion King people hadn't properly. But I was doing it. And it was a pal of mine who used to look after me when I was in shows as a kid, was chaperoning on the Lion King. And she said, come and stay with me and I'll organise it. It'll be fine. And they had all okayed it. But the school hadn't had the box ticked. Annie's Land College, Brian O'Sullivan. And I just had this image of me with a hairnet on or something like that. And I went, no. I stood up and I had this whole thing with him. So in the end, I said, right, I'll see you Monday, Annie's Land College. And then I was mysteriously sick for 2 weeks and went and did what I wanted
to do.
And never regretted it, obviously.
There you go.
Brilliant. So there you are, doing all this telework, and your careers advisor is trying to put you into hotel catering. And
well, she just suggested it.
She made a suggestion. So you started to twig now that you can go and study. That's what I'm getting at, because you had this idea of the film school.
No, the what happened was this. I left school. Prior to leaving school, at the end of the fifth year, I got a job in the advertising agency that my dad worked in.
Ah.
And... I worked in the studio there and I loved it. I really enjoyed it. And at the end of that, they actually offered me a full-time job.
Mm.
But I'd made up my mind I was going to go back to do a six-year. And so I went back to do a six-year and left school with not really any idea what I was going to do, but remembering that the job offer had been there from the agency, the advertising agency, I thought I would pursue a career start in advertising, but maybe starting out as a copywriter, because I wasn't bad at English. And I did a course in that.
Right.
And then about two-thirds of the way through the course, I got a phone call from the BBC again, asking me to do a play for them. And I asked for the time off to do it, and the college declined the time off, and so I took it anyway. Mm-hmm. And I dogged it and did the play.
Just like me, you dogged it and just did what you wanted.
And I remember getting on the bus when the studio was finished, about 9 o'clock at night at Queen Margaret Drive, getting on the bus at Botanics to head down to St. George's Cross. That's where I was brought up.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, no, this is what I want to do.
Right.
And the next day I went back into... the drama college in St. George's Place, and the Phil Douglas and Val Green, who worked in the office, were still there.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, look, I said, would it be, are there any places available for, you know, the next year's intake? And there was one final set of auditions and there was only a couple of places left.
Right.
And I got that, and I got a place to audition, and I auditioned and I got in, and that was it.
Right. So you had that moment of you were just coming back on the bus. You'd done filming, and you just
I can remember it clearly. I can remember sitting. I can actually see it sitting in the bus,
mm-hmm.
going down, and think, no, that's it.
Yeah, that's great though. When you have those things in life, that absolute clarity.
Yeah,
it doesn't happen that often for me, but you can't ignore it. Really,
no, sure.
Comes
sure.
to that point.
But that was the thing.
So did you meet people then that you had been involved with in the youth theatre?
No, there was very few people went on to do that. There was maybe a couple.
Mm-hmm.
There's maybe a couple. Certainly, the year that I was in, I mean, I did it for about 7 years. I was there from about 10 till I was about 17.
Right.
And when we got to 17, which was about fifth year, a couple, I think, people did the tech course. Because at that point, there was only, I mean, God, I think there's about, goodness, how many courses now?
Oh, yeah, so many.
But when I was there, there was the acting course, the teaching course,
yeah,
and the tech course. And the tech course was a year course. The other ones were 3 years.
Right, right, right.
And so I think there's maybe a couple, but none from the time that, I can't remember anybody really being there that when I was there. So
then it was just a new world and all new people to meet and
starting
again.
But remember, I had a year out as well. A lot of them were just coming from school. So the fact that I had a year out, that was a big help to me as well.
You're a man of the world by then.
Well, it
makes a difference.
But it makes a difference.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It does make a difference. So,
So were you studious? Or were you a tearaway?
No, not at all. I loved it. I was out of the 3 years there. I was off for one day out of the 3 years.
One day. Wow.
Yeah, I had a dodgy curry and I couldn't move. But I only missed one day.
Wow.
I absolutely loved it. Because it was something that I was comfortable with. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I could do it. And I loved it.
You like being in front of an audience?
I should add at this point that I did the teaching course.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't apply for the acting course. And part of the reason for that was, it's twofold really. It was in case things didn't work out, I'd have something to fall back on.
Mm-hmm.
And also, when I was at the junior course, one of my favourite teachers, who was, the junior course, I should explain, was really there for, to help the teaching course get teaching experience.
Yeah, but they still have that, an element.
They still have it. And one of my teachers was Bill Patterson.
Oh, right.
Billy Patterson.
Yeah.
And Billy did that quote, and I thought, well, if it's good enough for him.
Sure.
You know, and, but a lot of us, I mean, people that were there when I was there, Elaine C. Smith, she did the teaching course as
mm-hmm,
well.
Mm-hmm.
Going back before that, Tom Conti, he did the teaching course.
So it's not shabby.
Yeah. But and especially when you were graduating at that time, theatre and education was very high up, highly
absolutely.
Thought of. And that was a great, training for that.
Yeah.
And of course, when I left, I got my equity card from the Citizens Theatre TIE company, which was TAG.
Yeah.
So it was good training. But no, I loved the time that I had there. It was brilliant.
The Whip Hand, what was your experience working on it?
Well, it was all good. What happened was I'd worked with Douglas Maxwell before on his adaptation of Your Granny.
Graham McLaren
directed. And I got a call to asking if I would take part in a workshop for this play, The Whip Hand, that he'd written, that Orla from Travis was sort of presiding over at that time. And we'd done the same with Your Granny as well. And so it was really, I really enjoyed it. So went along and didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
Read this and I was just blown away by it. I loved it. And when we finished the thing, Orla had said, look, she said, if this goes ahead, we want you to do this.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'll make every effort to make sure that happens. And then it moved about that, because we did it at the NTS, and then the NTS, they didn't do it, and then the Travers were going to do it, and then Birmingham Rep were brought in
to
help finance it. And then Orla pulled out to direct something else. And anyway, ended up, we rehearsed in Birmingham for a month, or about a year ago just now actually, and brought it up to Edinburgh, then performed it for the 4 weeks at the Fringe. It was a fantastic experience, and as you say, it's great to be part of all that
especially at the Travers.
Really is. And then we played it again for another 2 weeks down in Birmingham, so we went back down there.
Right.
And I although I'm very much a home bird, I love being at home. I loved working in Birmingham.
Did you?
Birmingham, I'd been there late 70s as a student.
Mm-hmm.
I'd auditioned and got into this student company that was going to, made up of drama students, that was going to tour the States. And they ended up not doing it. And I didn't do it. But we had to meet up in Birmingham. And my memory of that time was this horrible place. It was really awful. And I didn't really. So when I had to go back down, I was thinking, God. But it's transformed. I mean, the regeneration is incredible. And the rep is a brilliant place to work.
Yeah.
And I loved it. And the people, the Birmingham people are so friendly.
That's great.
It was great. I loved it.
That's one of the things about touring is I think you get rid of maybe some stereotypes about places. I mean, we toured, I've toured the UK a bit, and one of the places I went to that I was really surprised by was Sheffield.
Oh, right. I was just thinking, Sheffield's a good place.
You know, whatever, northern town. Yeah, yeah. I didn't have any really preconception except it'll just be like everywhere else. But I was so taken with it.
Yeah, so no, really I've been there, so I know what you mean.
And it's that good. Happened quite a lot, you know, you go around. Have you done a lot of touring over the years?
No, not so much. Not so much in recent years, but I did when I was young. When I was younger and before I was married, I did do. So, I used to do the whole thing. You would be, if you did a play, but at that time it wasn't the NTS, it would be the Scottish Theatre Company or Borderline or whatever. Yep. And you would do the, you know, Edinburgh, Glasgow, Ayr, Inverness, Aberdeen, Dundee.
The whole lot.
Wow. So, yeah.
Dundee's amazing too. That's a place that I think gets a bad rep and is actually a great place.
Well, Dundee, you're absolutely right because, you know, when I first went up to Dundee, I think it was the first time I was there was doing the Bevelers with Borderline many, many years ago. And it wasn't too tricky. But I've been up recently because I did a programme called Bob Servant that was set in Broughty Ferry.
Oh, is that where that's set, right?
Yeah, so we're based in Dundee.
Yep.
And that, similarly to Birmingham, it's transformed. It's fantastic.
It's a great place.
And
yeah, I love it.
I'm particularly fond of Broughty Ferry.
Beautiful place.
Beautiful place. So,
a lot of nice restaurants. It's a bit posh, but not too posh.
Not too posh. No, it's great. Yeah.
Is Bob Servant still on the cards, or is it?
No. That finished a couple of years ago.
Oh, was it? Right, okay.
Unfortunately. But you never know. It might.
Well, this is it.
It might rise up from the ashes.
And then what about Two Doors Down? Is there more of that coming? Do we know?
Yes.
There is?
Yeah, there is. They're writing it just now, mm-hmm. and we start filming in that in September.
Right.
Beginning of September. I think we've got read-throughs in August, but then we film that right through to November.
And if I'm right, that's a pretty full-on sort of a schedule because you tend to appear in it.
Well, yeah.
Pretty fully, don't like quite a lot.
Yeah. It's
an ensemble thing, so it's like...
Very much so. Yeah. Well, you've been along, so you know what it's like.
Yeah.
It's... Yeah, it is, but you just get into, it's like anything else, you get into a routine, and I love doing it. It's a great job to do.
It's a big cast, but it's also a cast of pretty big hitters, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's you know, it's good folk in it, and I think the main thing for us all is the fact that the writing is of a really high standard,
mm-hmm.
and the scripts are great, and getting the chance to perform these. You know, it doesn't matter how good you are, how good you think. Yeah, if you don't have the words in front of you,
you need the goods.
So, no, it's a good job to do, and it's worked out well for BBC Two. They're happy with it. And so,
great.
Yeah.
Is there ever any on a job like that? Is there ever a challenge with the amount of people that are in it, and the amount of people that come from so many different great other projects in their past, and what I'm getting at is a clash of egos. Do you ever find that?
No, not really. No, I mean, you don't have time for that.
Mm-hmm.
You really don't. And the people that we've got on it, you know, if Emily was to, you know, try anything like that, they'd be put in their place pretty quickly. You know, you're there to do a job. You're contracted to to play this part, and that's it, you know, and you've got to do it to the best that you can. And you know, we're all there to sort of help each other and hopefully make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it should be. I mean, I didn't know a few of the people. I mean, obviously, I know Elaine and I know Alex.
Of course, yeah.
No, but it's a good mix. So, no, I enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I'm looking for it. I don't know what the script's going to be like, but I know that it'll be. I don't know what, when I say that, I don't know what the storylines are, but, you know, they know that they're going
to
be good. So.
But you're not going to Spain or any of that thing, is it going
to
I tried
to swing it to, for Alex and I to get a weekend in Amsterdam.
Class.
Because I was at a funeral of a pal of mine, and somebody came across, he's Scottish, this guy, but he's lived in Amsterdam for quite a while.
Mm.
And he said, listen, John, he said that 2 doors down, he said, because he'll get BBC over in right. Holland, right? And okay. He said, my mates love it.
They're, oh, right.
I said, really? So I told that right away, listen, I said to Gregor and Simon, do you realise?
There must be an angle here.
There must be an angle here.
But, oh, well.
However, no.
Yeah, it was cool to kind of just observe that working, well, to see you work, really. Because I've sat and watched you plenty of times, but to watch, you know, and everybody in that cast, to observe how people work, and they do it differently. Do you think it's a common theme in people who are considered to be comics to take their work very seriously? I mean is that people probably, members of the public probably expect you to be rolling on the floor constantly and making everybody
yeah
laugh,
I think that know. That is a pity. Well, you've seen it. I haven't observed myself, but I think I'm pretty serious about it and trying to get it right. But I think we all kind of do that, you know. The thing that we all, with 2 doors down, the question that's constantly, we constantly ask each other, would we actually do this? Would,
yes.
Is this real?
Yeah.
You know?
Because that's the only way that's going to be funny.
It's the only way it's going to be funny.
The royal family is obviously a big kind of reference point.
Yes, of course, yeah.
That type of thing.
Yeah,
and you have to go. The royal family went to me, just pushed a tiny bit too far towards the end.
Right.
And you go, they wouldn't do that.
Right. Well, I haven't seen that, so I don't know. But that's the question. I mean, if when you were there, you maybe we say that all the time. You know?
Yeah.
Would we actually do this? Yeah. Yes, Lynn, would I say that?
So you end up agonising over it, don't you? But it's worthwhile.
Yeah. Maybe you try and get it right, so.
What's the sort of emotional difference, if you like, for you from that experience to being in front of an audience and trying to gauge those reactions in the moment? I mean, you know, like a live audience, a panto audience, or something like that. That's a totally different thing, right?
Well, yeah, it's a completely different style, you know. With a panto, you're there's a kind of structure to telling the gag and you know, and nailing the punchline and stuff like that. But it's not, you know, it's much more subtle for the television side of things. So
is the structure underlying the panto or the live performance more important than the ad lib?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not a fan of the ad lib.
Are you not?
No. No, I don't, or fanning about, as I might call it. I like rehearsing it and getting it absolutely right, no matter what. I mean, listen, a lot of people think, you know, they'll ask me about 2 doors down and say, do you just throw these lines in? You go, no. It's carefully scripted. We wouldn't be allowed to, apart from me. And you wouldn't do it anyway. But similarly, obviously not with a play, but with panto, I think there can be the odd ad lib, but I really am not a fan of that. I'm a great believer in it, and it might be that you're 65th time doing it,
mm-hmm.
but it's the first time that they've seen it.
Of course, yeah.
And that's the, you know, you've got to give them the best you can.
How do you, but I mean, it's going to happen, isn't it? If you're in a panto with 20 other people, it does get thrown in. So what's your strategy for dealing with it?
What, with an ad lib?
Yeah, if someone throws one at you or something.
It very rarely happens, to be honest with you, Brian. I can't really think of anything that springs to mind. That
is that because people know that you don't, that wouldn't be your bag, do you think?
I don't think it's a common thing amongst people to do that, because I think people are pretty disciplined in their approach to their work. So it's not something that I've really had to concern myself about. But
and then you're going back to Panto this year after a wee break.
I'm going back to I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going to be working with Gavin Mitchell. I've known Gavin for many, many years.
Yep.
I love working with him. And I'd been asked, they've been on a few times, but because I do a program for Hogmanay, and because of that, it's sometimes difficult to schedule everything. But I'd said to my agent, I said, you know, if they come back, I'd really like, if it's something and it sounds good, I'd like to do it. And this came right out of the blue, and it's been fronted by the Crankies. And so there's Gavin, me, and Frances Thorburn as the fairy godmother.
I saw that,
And can I wait?
She's fantastic.
She's brilliant.
I didn't actually know the Crankies were doing it. That's brilliant. I love the Crankies.
The Crankies are great.
I absolutely love the Crankies. So I suppose if a company like that's going to ask you, they know that they're going to have only an excuse to work around. Because they couldn't know.
It was easy enough to sort in the end, actually. It all depended on when 2 Doors Down finished.
Right, so that you could then shoot Only an Excuse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's fine. So it's all sorted.
Oh, great. What's your process for Only an Excuse anyway? Do you, throughout the year, are you sort of taking wee sly notes and going, that would be something to hit on? Or what?
Well, I'm not necessarily sly. but we all know, myself, Philip Differ, Rab Christie, and Norrie Davidson, I'll take notes throughout the year of things that, you know, there might be a sketch and something that might the public might be aware of, and we can might maybe have a bit of fun with.
Yeah,
and we met up on Friday there,
right.
Yesterday.
Okay,
so that was the kind of first get together.
Okay,
and I think I'd printed up a list of about 20, 30 things, but everybody's got that.
Yeah.
And then you sort of mix it all up and see if that, you know, can spark the writers. So what we do is we meet up at different stages, and when I'm doing 2 Doors Down, about halfway through it, will be the first batch of scripts.
Right.
And I'll go in on a day off, maybe at the weekend, and we'll read them through and see what they sound like.
Yeah.
And that gives the boys an idea. And then it's just the process of putting it all together, and we shoot it over 5 days.
5 days?
At the end of November.
That's pretty swift.
Well, that's about right. For about that length of programme, that's about right. So it's, there's good people that come to be part of it as well.
Yeah.
Ryan Fletcher and Sally Reid, Moyo Akande, Louise McCarthy.
Moyo
did it, yeah.
She's tremendous.
She is, she's great.
Desperately trying to get her on this show, but she's so, like everybody, she's so busy.
I think she's up just now.
Is she?
I think she might be, so.
Oh, she'd be getting a text off of me.
Getting a text.
Right, okay, great. So you have people that come back every year.
Yeah. So, it's good to do.
That's tremendous. You must have a hell of a lot of costume changes and wig fittings, or do you have standards that you just keep going back to and shoving on?
No. There's a lot of the time can be taken up with the not so much costume and makeup, getting in and out of it all. So, but it's just a thing that we've fine-tuned over the years. So we've got a really good team that work on it. So.
They know how it goes, and
so it's not as a surprise to them either. So
that's
good.
You must have a tremendous amount of stuff to learn as well, though.
Well, because of the sort of turnover for it, if you like, it's not too bad. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not something to worry about. You know, we get through it. It's fine.
You've got quite used to learning over the years, of course. I mean, learning for telly, you've got new sides every day, really.
Yeah.
So well, you've
got
a system.
It's like you get a system. I mean, what I do, I mean, many people do it or try and learn an episode in advance.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the cast and Two Doors Down will do that. I do it the night before.
Just what's coming up.
Just what's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'll do is, we'll wrap at 7. I'll be home by 7:30. I'll have a sandwich. By 8 o'clock, I'm marking up the sides for the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Start learning them. Light out at 10, up at 5:30. Look at them again.
Yeah.
Over breakfast. Pick up at 7. And then you're in front of the camera at 8. And just that routine.
Yes, yeah.
And we help each other out as well. You know, people are very generous and good about, you know, trying to make it a little bit easier. But we run the lanes ourselves. We're all...
When you're sitting off, you...
But you've seen us sitting there. But, so we do all that kind of stuff. So
you get there. That means you don't have time to do anything else with your life when you're shooting that, though, pretty much. Am I right?
Yeah, well, it's a 5-day... You work a 5-day week, so you've got the weekends.
You can do things at the weekends.
So you can do things at the weekend. Listen, it's you're not at the coal face.
No, that's so right.
It's a good gig.
Yeah, somebody said that to me the other day. Thing is, I could be working down a mine, and you do kind of go, oh, yeah. Because we love a moan, don't we?
Well, the thing is, I think that people don't or not realise, but the way it's shot is very repetitive. Like, if you've got a 10-page scene and there's 8 of us in the room, we'll do that about 40 or 50 times.
So you got the first couple where you put it, get it back in your head, and then it's going over and over it, isn't it?
It's going, and then what happens is you get word blind. You know, and to be fair, what they try and do is, if you've got the bulk of the scene, they'll try and shoot your close up first,
right? Get that done.
Get that done. If you're carrying the scene, they'll do that, and that makes it a little bit easier on you, because it gets in the studio, it gets so warm, and if you're doing it after lunch, the heads are beginning to go. You know.
I remember the episode that we worked on together was you're all sitting around listening to the radio in the middle of the night.
Oh yeah.
So not only was it warm and the room's full, but it was sort of dark.
Yeah.
And quiet.
Yeah.
And the rolls, the endless rolls and sausage and rolls and bacon coming out.
I loved that episode.
Because
we're all in our pyjamas. It was the car alarm going off.
That's right. Kate got everybody up.
I loved that episode.
Yeah.
Because I could just feel what it was going to be like. It was great.
It had a good vibe about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I came in to read the shipping forecast.
That's right, yeah.
And then they said to me at the end of the day, what are you doing tomorrow? I said, oh, I don't know. Because it kept going rolling on. Can you come back? And it was the weirdest little gig. What are you doing tomorrow? Oh, I don't know. Elaine has to leave early. She's got a thing, whatever it was. Could you read in? And I said, of course, yeah. So I'm kind of trying to do my best impersonation. Unnecessary. And then when I got in the morning, they handed me a shrink-wrapped pair of jammies. And I went, wait a minute, what's this now? She said, well, the thing is, your arm might be slightly in shock when you take the rolling sausage. So I'm sitting there with the old dressing gown on and all that.
Yeah,
it's weird, the things you get roped into.
See, there you go.
Did you ever do that thing where you snapshot your day and go, what am I doing now? You know, when you were younger or when you were doing some weird job?
No. Well, I mean, there are moments when it becomes a little bit bizarre, depending on what the job is, but no, it's all part of the...
You just get used to it, I suppose, don't you?
Don't think about it.
How many years have you been doing Only an Excuse?
Only an Excuse started on the radio.
It was radio first, yeah.
In 1986.
Was that before Watson's Wind-Up?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, considerably before.
Right, I see.
What happened was... with Only an Excuse was we were doing Naked Radio at the time,
mm-hmm.
which led to Naked Video, but we kept on doing it when we're still doing Naked Video. And we used to record it at the Tron at lunchtime,
mm-hmm.
And there was a football documentary on called Only a Game that was written by William McIlvany, and it was directed and made by Mike Alexander,
mm-hmm.
who, funnily enough, was the assistant cameraman in the very first job I did.
Oh, right.
The Wednesday Play. He was assistant to Alex Scott. Anyway, so they made this football documentary, and it was brilliant. It was really, really good, and nobody had ever seen anything like it before. and it charted the sort of history of Scottish football. And the first two in particular were great because it focused on five great players, mm-hmm. and then the second one, I think it was the managers. And it was great. And we used to talk about it all the time, and me and Philip and Tony were out of the Naked Radio crew. We were into football, and I used to do William McIlvany's voice. You know, we'd be marking up our script and up the back, going, you know, whenever you thought the game was over and all that stuff, right. We'd do this kind of voice. And old Jimmy Murphy at Old Trafford used to say, if you could ever pick a man to score a goal to save your life, there's only one man you would choose, and he was the lawman. Well, you know, you're getting to Dennis Law. And I used to love doing it. And then Philip had this idea of doing a spoof for it. And this will give you an idea of how things have changed over the years in regard to commissioning. He went to Stan Taylor, who was head of BBC Radio Scotland at the time. And he said, Stan, he said, I've got an idea for a spoof football programme, sort of based roughly around about only a game. And he said, I would write it and get Bob Black, Ian Paterson to put in bits and bobs. He says, Johnny's going to be in it. I'm going to ask Tony to maybe do it as well. I was wondering if it would be possible if we could get some money to make a pilot.
Right.
And Stan said, bear in mind, it hasn't been written yet, right? So Stan said to me, he said, a pilot? He said, listen, that sounds like a great idea. Just go and make the programme.
Whoa.
And that was it. Now,
now imagine that now.
Now it'd be a year and a half down the line, and then somebody would say, you know what, we'll just leave it just now, thanks. And that'd be it.
Year and a half of your life put into it. Yeah.
That's how it started. And it was put out, the very first one was broadcast before Scotland played West Germany in 1986 in Mexico. Mm-hmm. I think they could beat 2-3-1 or something like that. But we owed a huge debt to Radio Clyde, who played it down the line. And as a result, there was bootleg copies flying all over South America at the time. But that was one of the big things that kicked it off. And but there was nothing else like it. This was before Off the Ball or anything like that. There was nothing else like it at the time. So it just kind of took off.
And did it get time to go out for like big games like that, or was it just six parts that went out, you know, one every Wednesday or what?
No, it wasn't. It was one-offs.
Oh, I see.
It was one-offs, and at that time they would come out as double cassettes.
Oh, this amazing.
This is even before CDs.
So people would buy it for their dad for Christmas and all
that
as well.
Yeah, stuff like that. Yeah. And we made about two, three or four, I can't really remember, to be honest with you. And then we did stage shows of it. We did a couple of stage shows, which were huge sellouts. Mm-hmm. And in the back of that, this is before, I mean, not to the extent that we were doing SSCC Hydro or anything like that, but
yeah.
We would sell the pavilion out packed for a fortnight, sold out. Wow. And in the back of that, BBC Scotland gave the comedy unit the money to make a Hug Monet special.
Right.
It was kind of we tested the waters. I did a program about 1992 with Philip called The Ferguson Theory. Mm-hmm. There was two series of it. One was called 2000 Not Out, and one was called The Ferguson Theory. And I think it was 2000 Not Out actually was the first one. And we kind of tested the water and did a sort of mini pilot within it, where I did this little football thing over 7 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And it won the Roses in the Sunday Mail, that particular bit.
Right.
And that's how we got the TV thing. Yeah.
And what was the idea with it being in Hug Monet? Was just, we'll do one a year, let's do it as a roundup of the year kind
of
thing?
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Very much that. And then it went out prior to Ricky Fulton's programme.
Oh, so they were back to back.
They were back to back. And then when Ricky retired. Yeah. I get moved up. Philip actually worked on both the programmes.
That's right.
He was a producer of Scotch and Rye.
Scotch and Rye was tremendous.
Yeah.
Were you ever involved in that?
No.
You were always doing Only Excuse, of course.
No. It's Scotch and Rye was kind of before my time. Tony and Gregor were in it.
They popped up in it a lot. Yeah.
And by the time, I think Scotch and Rye had actually finished when we started doing this. I think it was I Am Jolly.
Oh, this sort of
I Am
later.
Jolly specials.
Yes.
Which Bob wrote, and I think another producer was maybe brought in. So
Yeah. Wow. You're in good company, though.
Yeah.
It's tremendous. So you're doing it again this year.
Do it again, yeah, do it. But we don't, I mean, we only find out round about springtime what the plan is.
So you're not to assume that it's every year?
Never assume.
Each year so far?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, we've never known, you know, but it's not as if, you know, you've got a 5-year contract or anything like that. It's like we approach each one as if it's the last, if you like. So
they always, everyone I've spoken to about Taggart said that as well, because they were year on year, they just said, right, well, we'll do this one and see what happens.
Yeah.
And yeah, of course, it went on for years and years, but they never knew.
Yeah, well, I think it's maybe quite a good way of doing it, actually.
Yeah.
It keeps people on their toes and stuff.
Mm-hmm. So then, if you don't know what's happening, what would you like to happen next year, for example, in your career over the next few years? What are your big, have you got big milestones, big goals still?
No, the goal that or whatever is to work in good projects with good people.
Yeah.
And, you know, that'll do me. I've got no plans to play Hamlet. much the disappointment of people at Lyceum and sets.
And the public.
But no, I just want to carry on working with good people. I just finished working with Steve Coogan. Did a bit in the new Alan Partridge, and that was a wonderful experience.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, doing things like that that'll do me fine.
That's great. Is he doing another movie or a new series?
It's a new series for BBC One.
Oh,
I think
cool.
It goes out, I think it goes out before Christmas. There was a thing, the BBC Press always put a thing out to say that it was going to be, I think it might be late autumn, beginning of the winter.
Some of his more recent Alan Partridge has been just brilliant.
Ah, it's brilliant.
I mean, you look back, the stuff in the late 90s and early 2000s you thought was peak, and then every time he brings it back, it's got a new edge. You know, he's reinvented that character so cleverly over the years.
It's very funny.
Oh, that's great that you get to be involved as well.
Yeah, it was good. Huh?
Did you ever have times earlier in your career when it didn't flow so well? Did you have any gaps where you worried and thought about making a change?
No, I've been very lucky, actually.
Yeah.
I've always... Believe this, believe it or not, I've always had a job to go to.
Really?
I've always had something lined up.
That's great.
And I've been very fortunate that way. But I mean, I don't think I'm just sitting by the phone. I'm quite proactive in making things happen as well. But I've always plugged away. Yeah.
Yeah. What about auditioning? Do you find yourself in audition situations much these days?
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah. It's crazy when you think about it. I mean, the way that how that has changed over the years. I mean, when I left, I mean, if you told me, you know, that you could be walking down the street, right, and your mobile phone goes off, right, and your agent says, "Look, I've emailed a set of sides to you.
Of course,
can you use your self tape app, film it, and then send it to me, and I'll pass it on." To the cast director. I mean, and looking back to when I left drama college.
Yeah.
I mean, what I do now is, because you used to go along for auditions. You would arrive, you'd probably have no idea what the character was, what the story was. You'd be given about 2 or 3 pages when you get there. You'd have a quick look at it, and you'd go in and you'd read it.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know that now you're given a chance to, you know, do your homework and look at the site. And what I do now is I learn it. I always learn. I try and get it as close to performance as I can now. Mm-hmm. I audition, all the time. And I think there's very few people now.
Who aren't doing?
Who don't do that. I mean, I think maybe some people would like to like you to believe the failure. So I think you'll find now the way that things are cast and cast by committee.
Yes.
They need to have some kind of evidence about what they're backing here.
Mm-hmm.
They need to know what you're going to come up with.
Yeah.
So, no, I audition all the time. I love it.
You enjoy it?
Yeah. It's part of the process, part of the deal. But no,
well,
I enjoy
it's, yeah,
it.
It's part of the gig, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what I try and do now. I try and learn it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do that.
I saw you in a thing at Oranmore where I feel like you played a priest or a minister. Can you?
That would be right. Yeah.
Elucidate and remind me what it was called.
No, I can't.
Sally was in it.
Sally was in it. And Cameron
Fulton, who I saw yesterday, weirdly enough.
Yeah.
Can't remember what it's called.
Well, but we both, funnily enough, that was about just over a year and a bit ago.
Yeah.
The two of us were doing stuff for Playwright Studio.
Right.
Last Wednesday.
Oh, were you?
Yeah. So that was the first time three of us had been together. I can't remember what it's called, but I can't even tell you who wrote it.
Can I?
But
it was tremendously funny, I remember that.
He was also, the chap that wrote it, very nice bloke, he was an assistant to the Speaker of the House of Commons.
Was he?
He was. So, there you go.
So you've got that fact.
I've got that fact, but anything else?
Nothing else. So, people were playing different characters, I remember that.
Well, Cammy, he kind of drove it. And he was the central figure, and Sally and I popped up in different guises too.
You weren't a priest all the way through. You were the dad and the granddad, and
yeah,
it's coming back to me.
Yeah, teacher,
yeah,
stuff like that.
I remember laughing.
Well, do you know? It seemed that's the only Oranmore I've done. I've been asked to do a few, but for one reason or other, it never worked out. And it was actually Sally had mentioned me for that. And because she thought it would work very well for Oranmore, and she was absolutely right. It just was the right type of thing for the audience, and it went down very, very well, and seemingly very well reviewed. I didn't read them, but
do you not read them?
No,
never.
I did when I was younger, but not anymore.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not anymore. Not even if they're nice.
Because if you believe the good ones, you've got to believe the bad ones.
That's right.
That's what they say.
That's absolutely right.
It takes great discipline to not read them, I think.
Ach, not really. It's just somebody's opinion.
It is.
My dad used to be very... My dad was very good about it because my dad was a... he trained at the... He was a commercial artist. He mm-hmm. trained at the Glasgow School of Art. He got a job in the papers in Glasgow. He worked in the Record for a while. And he used to say, what you got to remember is, and this would probably annoy a lot of the critics, certainly the Cats people, it's the least most important part of a newspaper.
Mm.
I said, really? He said, yeah. He said, as far as the paper men are concerned, it's the least most important part. Wow. So,
oh, there
whether,
you go.
Whether that's still the case, I'm just quoting my father. I'm not saying I believe him, because but that's what my dad saying to me. So it's one person's opinion.
It's funny because it's not as if, I mean, I've never had an experience where I've looked at a review in a paper organically, just come across it, and then made a decision to either see or not see the show. Do you know what I mean? As
yeah,
a member
yeah,
of the public, that's yeah. never happened to me.
No, in fact, if it's a particularly bad review, you'd maybe want to go along.
Oh, I'd be right there.
I can remember when I was just out of drama college, there was a production of the Scottish play with Peter O'Toole and Francis Tomalty, who at that point was married to Sting, and it was so bad. It was so bad. You couldn't get a ticket for love nor money.
Oh, glorious. That's the idea of heaven to me. If I saw a really terrible review, I'd be right there.
I remember there was one production of something which I'm not prepared to name that a very good friend of mine was going along to see. I said, what are you going along to see that for? He said, because things could happen tonight, it could never happen again. He said, it could be so bad, this could, history in the making here.
Yeah,
so
you could witness something.
So witness saw that.
Well, let's hope we're neither of us ever involved in one of those.
Touch wood.
We've got time yet. Maybe we'll be in something together. That would be nice.
Yes, there you go.
But good luck with you and Gav. in the Crankies. I can't wait to see you. We'll get a laugh.
Well, listen, I hope you can make it.
I'll be there. And thank you for taking the time to chat to me.
Oh, listen, pleasure. Thanks, Brian.
Jonathan Watson there, and he took time out of his life to come to my wee house, as many, many people have, and I'm so grateful to him and to all the other people that have done it. It was great to chat to him, and I'm looking forward to seeing him in that panto. It's been many years since I saw him in panto. I definitely have at the King's, and to see him and Gavin together will be a real treat. And of course, the Crankies are in it, and what's not to love? That's fantastic. Francis Thorburn, I'm punting it, even though I'm not in it, but yeah, go along and see it. At the SECC at the Armadillo this Christmas season during December. So, looking forward to that, and looking forward to continuing with all the exciting projects I've got going on, not least the podcast. Lots of exciting guests coming up, so do keep tuning in every Wednesday, wherever you get your podcasts. So it only remains for me to say thank you very much to my faithful sponsors, purplepandamedia.com, where I got my website and logo design, so do check them out if you're looking for anything like that. And until next week, I'll just say the thing that I always say at this point. Cheerio now!